Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport. Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined today by Ohio State head coach Nick Myers as we are talking about how recruiting works. And Coach Myers, really appreciate your taking the time to join us. I know that this is a really busy time, and an unusually busy time for the Buckeyes as you guys are preparing to head abroad here at the end of the week, right?
Yeah, Terry, it's great to see you. It's been a great summer. Yes. We're getting back at it a little bit earlier than usual. The NCAA affords you an opportunity to go abroad every 4 years, and it's something that we did in 2018 by taking the men to Portugal, and it was an incredible experience. You know, a lot of our men just don't get that study abroad opportunity as a full-time Division I athlete. So, you know, it's been a heavy lift on the fundraising side. The post-COVID European prices are not ideal, but we found a way through our 11th man support of our friends and family. So the men, a majority of the men are back today. The rest of them come back the end of this week, and we'll be getting on a plane to Rome on Sunday for a week. So really looking forward to time with the men and the team before school starts.
No doubt. What's it like just kind of preparing from a practice standpoint for going abroad? And you know, what is the schedule lacrosse-wise going to be when you're there?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I think we have two new assistants that we're really excited about, some new faces on the roster. And so I think using it as an opportunity to really acclimate to each other, kind of put the phones away, you know, minus maybe taking some remarkable pictures, but just connect, you know, just spend time. You know, I think the lacrosse piece is almost secondary, you know, to just the time spent. You know, I think about the 2 weeks that I spent in Ireland last year. Obviously, that was very lacrosse intensive every day. People ask me, how'd you enjoy Ireland? I mean, I never left the university. Whereas this trip, you know, is going to have a very different feel. You know, I think we'll have maybe 2 days of lacrosse, but we'll get up in the morning. We'll go for a light jog. We'll do a little bit of training. But, you know, the guys have journals they'll take with them. We have a book we've been reading. You know, we'll start to kind of unpack our cultural playbook. And then we'll go on some fun adventures. You know, we've got a lot of fun things planned. We arrive, we go right to the Coliseum. Then we're heading out to the coast where we'll do some kayaking, some e-bikes, see some castles, see some sights. And I think most importantly, just be with each other. You know, then we come home Sunday a week later and school starts Tuesday. So a really nice way for your team to just kind of get, you know, more or less declassified. You know, you're mixing up all your guys, your freshmen, your seniors. They're just spending time together. And I think finding that chemistry to start the year is a great opportunity in addition to seeing obviously some amazing sights.
Sounds incredible and certainly safe travels and enjoyable for you, your staff, and the guys as you know, they had one of the most magical places in the world. Shifting gears back to the topic at hand. So over the course of the last couple weeks leading to August, when folks kind of transition mentally from focusing on playing and performing at the highest level that they can in order to afford themselves the best opportunities that they can, to then, you know, hoping for the beginning of communication on September 1st, if they're members of the class of 2025, this becomes the kind of management of anxiety as well as trying to educate yourself as best as possible. And I've had a few folks reach out to me over the course of the last couple weeks, and certainly that will continue to persist over the course of the next few weeks, just with questions that I don't want to call them are fundamental or rudimentary, but they fall under the category of like, I'm surprised you didn't know that. And, you know, one of the things that kind of illustrates is me and Inside Lacrosse need to do a better job of facilitating, you know, the access to that knowledge. And really the questions stem from one fundamental question, which is how does recruiting work? And I think that hearing from guys who operate the system, the process, etc., is a really good way to try to answer some of those questions. So that's the thesis of what we're trying to discuss. And I think it kind of breaks down into two parts, evaluation and communication. And those two parts have a lot of layers to them. So let's take them in that order, and realizing that you can't talk about prospective student athletes until after they've signed an LLI, which the class of 2024 has not yet done. And obviously your class of 2023 is just a couple of days away from arriving on campus. I want to focus on it in general terms, just from the standpoint of the class of 25, because, you know, even if we were to focus on it on either of the last 2 years, I still think that there was a little bit of a tinge of the way in which COVID and the ability to evaluate on a multi-season basis kind of affected that. But I don't think that's nearly as much the case for the 25. So I think that, you know, as you look at this class as a proxy for the 26s, 7s, 8s, 9s, you know, barring anything unforeseen, it's more helpful to start from that standpoint. So to begin, how do you and your staff start? When do you start looking at that, you know, again, for the purposes of this conversation, when did you start watching 25s? Last summer, last fall, this spring, this summer?
Yeah. Well, great stuff there, Terry. I think it's a great topic to dive into. And I think you nailed it with, when I go to some of these events, I have the opportunity to speak to parents. You know, a lot of times that's the highlight of the event. Obviously, yeah, exposure, but I think the education, the opportunity to have question and answer, the opportunity to just kind of talk a little bit about this process, you know, from this side of it is really important. So thankful to have the opportunity to share. You know, I think one of the questions I get a lot around what you just asked was, when is your recruiting season? But when do you recruit? I think that to answer that is, there's never a time to recruit. Even in a dead period, conversation, coach calling you. For the folks out there that think there's like a certain period of time where you can only get recruited here or there, there's certainly contact periods, there's evaluation periods, there's times when we're not allowed to get out and do it, but we can always have a phone conversation if you're eligible for a phone call. And there's always the ability to send emails, read emails. Now, we can't always respond. So again, so we'll get into some of the nuances of the rules, but to answer that question of when are we recruiting, that's, you know, the sign outside my office says you win with people. By Woody Hayes. I truly believe that people are the most important thing in this brotherhood, this organization. We're constantly assessing, looking, evaluating, and finding ways to bring in the best and brightest Buckeyes into this brotherhood. And so when you talk about the 25, and I think it's an excellent class, top to bottom, first of all. But yeah, that evaluation process really started by just identifying young men really over a year ago. You know, this past summer was probably the biggest evaluation piece. But you go back a year ago, last summer, you know, you're definitely peeking at some of the 26 fields, or at that time, the 25 fields. You're hearing about some guys. You're talking to these club coaches that really are pretty aware of, hey, I'm the 24 contact, but I got a pretty good feel for the 25s and 26s. Here's a couple guys that I think you should definitely invite out to your prospect camp or keep an eye on. So I think those types of dialogues, Terry, are where it starts. You start to build out like what we refer to at Ohio State is kind of like our futures list, you know, so like we have our 25s, we're getting ready for September 1st, like everybody is now, but we have a futures list of 26s through almost 29s. And again, it's not super intensive, you know, they're not necessarily graded the same way as the 25s are, but you're putting a name down, you're putting a club team down, you're saying, hey, I saw that guy, that guy really popped. That's a guy that we want to keep an eye on. Maybe invite out to our prospect camp, make sure that we see, you know, next fall, this fall, or even next summer. But yeah, the 25s are coming off probably the most important 90 days of their recruiting process, right? The last maybe June 1st to you know, the end of July, if you will, that 60-day window and probably the preparation of their season leading up to that is as important as any, I would say, with the way the recruiting timetable is right now from an evaluation.
So let's dive into how you evaluate, what you look for. You mentioned you've got two new members of your staff. Who are your assistants and what are their roles?
Yeah, thanks for asking. You know, Coach Crane has been with me now as our associate head coach for 8 years. He does a lot of the coordinating, you know, of the recruiting, but it's something that we all really enjoy. It's something that I really have a passion for. We've brought on Coach Tuma, Justin Tuma, who was with us in 2018 as a volunteer, spent the last 5 years down at High Point under another Buckeye captain, John Torpy, and Andrew Vossler, who also spent 2 years in 2019 and 20 here at Ohio State, who's been over at Colgate for several, I think the last 3 years. So, you know, having now an extra full-time assistant who can recruit, you know, the road is something we're really thankful for. We're using our 11th man to create the funds, but it's a salary position, benefits, and you know, again, just to bring clarity to that, in the past, lacrosse, men's lacrosse has had two full-time coaches in addition to the head coach that can get out and recruit. Sometimes a parent or family member may see a volunteer. They may be at the event, but by the letter of the law, they're really not allowed to recruit and evaluate. They're allowed to work. So what the ruling has now done, it's opened up a third assistant for schools to potentially finance and allow that staff member to really have the same responsibility potential as the other two. So we really have four recruiters now, Terry, for the first time. And this summer, as of June 1st, when the rule went into place, was the first time we really were able to use that. I think it was July 1st. But that's when you saw these third assistants on the road and really like a recruiting capacity. So to answer your question, you know, Coach Crane kind of puts together a summer schedule. He'll kind of dictate, you know, where we're all going, who's going where. Hey, coach, you're going to BC and you're doing, I like to do Canada, so I'll spend time in Canada. But then we'll talk about, hey, what are the big ones? You know, what are the events that we need two or three people at? You know, we just kind of divide it up that way. And that's kind of the initial plan. But then you get into the weeds of, you know, how do you organize your evaluations? You know, when an event ends, what does that look like? And I'm happy to expand upon that. But I think the first thing is creating a plan for what is an enormous amount of opportunity to see young men play. And you want to make sure that you're not seeing the same guys week in and week out. You want to make sure that with the amount of lacrosse being played, you're getting the West Coast guys, you're getting the Southeast, getting the hotbed areas. You know, you feel like you're getting both sides of Canada. And that can be really challenging. And sometimes, you know, again, my evaluation of a Canadian is going to be a little different than Coach Crane's or Coach Tuma's. So again, what kind of system do you have in place to create consistencies that when an event ends, you can have dialogue and say, okay, what did you see? Who did you look like? And like I said, that's probably the first part of your question. I'm happy to go a little bit deeper if you'd like into like what that looks like on the actual grades and organization.
Yeah, and I want to get to that. But before getting to that, I also am interested in how you describe your style or what you value when you watch, and then how that differentiates or is different from the other members of your staff. How you want it to be similar, how you want it to be different. From the standpoint of, does everybody recruit essentially all four positions, offensive players, defensive players, faceoff guys, and goalies, or do you specialize in that area?
That's a great question. Yeah, it is. And I know that's going to have some variances for people listening from staff to staff. So I'm speaking just from an Ohio State perspective. But, you know, bringing on Coach Vossler, he is someone that I think is going to really grab the reins of our faceoff and goalie unit. Two units that he loves to coach, that he coached when he was here with us. And does a remark. I think he's as good as anybody out there as a goalie and faceoff coach. And so he'll really develop his depth chart in those two units. But also will have his hand in recruiting, you know, defensive attackmen. He hears about a guy or he sees. So to answer your question, it's pretty collaborative. You know, if I'm watching a game, I'm not turning my brain off to defensive guys or offensive guys. I'm really looking for the best and brightest out there, looking for guys that would be a great fit for Buckeye lacrosse and the Big Ten Conference. And I think we all are to a degree. You know, I think that, like, and I'll think about, I'll use college, for example, like, you go into a class, I think if you and I went into the same class and we took notes of a lecture for an hour, our notes would look slightly different, you know, and I think we would probably end in the same space in terms of creating a study guide or like, hey, what were the takeaways from the lecture? All right, but you and I would do a little bit different, you know, in terms of the way we broke that down. So what I try to do is not, you know, micromanage the way my staff takes notes, but like we got to get to a grade. We got to get to a space where we can find some consistency. So we have a grading system in place that we use. And it's not that different than what you use it inside the cross. You know, it's, you know, 3, 4, or 5, you know, with a 5-star being, a rare young man, that's like just a total package. So you're having, you know, 4 pluses, 4 minuses, a 3 plus, you know, one of the things that I like to do, and this is more me personally, just helps my brain, is I like to write down a player. So if I'm evaluating Terry Foy, you know, and I'll write down a player that I coached, a guy in the PLL, you know, just as like he plays like Will Manny, not like Brennan O'Neill.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so like, I always try to find in my mind, like, who do I think he plays like, even if it's a reach, cause that always brings me back to my evaluation. And it just helps me, you know, saying like, where do I project him? Where do I see him? I think his game, his ceiling would look something like this player. And it could be a former player. It could be, like I said, a pro, it could be a guy, another team. That to me helps me more with my evaluation than anything. And it also helps me visualize the role that I would foresee him playing in our offense, in our defense. So that's just a little trick that I like to use in addition to my notes, my grades. If I'm watching a player play on Friday and then he plays again on Saturday at the same event, a lot of times I'll use like black ink for the first evaluation, then I'll use a red pen the second day, just so that I can kind of see like, hey, man, was there any differences from day one to day two? Was there maybe some nerves? Man, he was much more aggressive on day two. I had him for 3 goals in the first game of the day. You know, he didn't even take a shot in the first game yesterday. Sometimes these individual evaluations at like a Maverick, for example, it takes a young man with his style a day or a game or two just to get comfortable with his teammates. Whereas an alpha who's a big time bull dodger or alley dodger can come out of the gates and show really well. But as you watch, as the days go on, some of the nuances may not be there. So those are different evaluations than watching a young man play with a club team who he's played with maybe for years versus playing with his high school team. You know, and I think, you know, goal scored at Maverick or even at Inside the Cross, one of your events, there's not always like a huge hurrah, right? If it's an invitational, right? It's just yeah. Kids are trying to get off well. Whereas you go to a high school event, I mean, they're playing, you know, to win. And so sometimes that competitiveness is so important to us as coaches. That's a big part of our evaluation. You know, what kind of a competitor are you? How hungry are you to really continue to grow? And a lot of that's shown up in just your desire to win and your desire to compete every time you step on a lacrosse field. So there was a lot I just said there, but I think those are some of the things that I would speak to in terms of variances in our evaluation.
No, it's really helpful in a number of respects. I mean, one thing that I'm always interested in a coach's attitude toward is comparison, which you brought up. And you brought it up in a way that I think is really valuable when folks start to realize how expansive the amount of information you try to manage over the course of a comparatively short period of time is. You know, you compare it to a 17-week college lacrosse season where you essentially have 17 games over the course of those 17 weeks. You compare that to what's effectively a 7-week season, and if you're on the road 5-6 days a week consuming 8 to 10 games a day, I mean, you're looking at 300, I mean, you're looking at 50 to 70 games a week times 7. I mean, you're talking about like almost 500 games over the course of a summer. The amount of information that you try to manage is so unwieldy. And so those cues, like an association or a comparison just to spark your memory, ends up becoming really valuable, because you can be as diligent as you want in converting all of the information that you take in into something that is more trackable or manageable, like a grade and in an electronic format. But even still, when it comes time to make decisions, like, you might have too much information just with the grades in the electronic format, right? So trying to come up with ways to, you know, more quickly manage all that information is key. But the question that I have before we move on to the communication side of the experience is around, I use the term a spectrum. I think that there are more than two poles in the spectrum of how a player is evaluated, and you pointed to a third pole would essentially be attitude, right? Competitive spirit and fire, and that kind of exists outside of what I think are two of the starting points for the spectrum of evaluation. One is production, right, which you kind of alluded to with respect to he had 3 goals on the second day and he didn't take a shot on the first day. If you're aware of that, it suggests that you're at least in some respects monitoring production. And then at the other end of the spectrum is kind of the athletic ingredient, right? And that's the term that I use, which essentially means whether or not that individual is productive. The snap judgment that I can make about the type of athlete or the style of player that he is suggests to me that in my system or in my form, you know, on my team, he will be productive, right? And so it doesn't put as much of an onus on, is he productive in the setting that I'm watching him? And it's probably dangerous to be too far in either direction of the spectrum. I tend to be more at that, like, athletic ingredient end of the spectrum as opposed to the the production tracking end. But I have respects for both, and I'm interested in where you feel like you fall, and if there's more, you feel like your staff is pretty uniform, or if there's variety in terms of one of your assistants falls a little bit more to one end, and whereas you fall a little bit more to the other.
Yeah, no, Terry, I think you nailed that, brother. I think watch more. I watch a lot of the PLL. Watch the World Games here. Certainly watch national. As you go into the off season and you formulate, your reflection of your year, areas that you know that you improve upon. As this continues to grow, I do believe that it's still a game played in a lot of different sizes and shapes. But I think that the athletic ability that you saw in that national title game. Play week in, week out in the professional it's pretty impressive. Continuing to have an uptick in terms of what that looks like. I do think that's really important to have to consider if you're going to play a top five schedule, your durability, your ability to withstand 4 or 5 months of practice, and, playing a ranked team week in, week out, and what that does physically to your lacrosse team. Is something you have to recruit to. There's no doubt about that. I think that we kind of, I would break it into kind of two categories from like character and competence. And, to me, those are the two, really simply put, even when we're building our team, Italy is more about building the character of our team than competence. We'll start to get a little bit of lacrosse. We'll start to introduce that. But like the character is what we're going to really focus our time on. Our leaders emerging, building in terms of the Buckeye way. And I think when you're recruiting, you're doing similar. You have to kind of decide, yes, I'm at an evaluation, watching him play. So I'm really probably 70-30, I'm evaluating his competence versus his character, but I have like little letters, like a D is durability. So if I feel like there's a guy that just for some reason or another, he's been hurt a lot, he breaks down. Hey, man, listen, he's a really good player, but there's a durability question. We're going to have to dig deeper into that and to make sure we understand, where is that coming from? And is this something that he'll grow out of, or is this something that could linger? On a character side, little things like, again, the type of teammate it is, the type of energy he provokes towards others. So I do think that when I'm doing my evaluation, I am making notes relative to the competence of the player, and that's where his athleticism, his ceiling, is he a bit raw? Is he a guy from kind of a non-traditional area of Ohio that has just come on the scene, who I think is a big time high school football player who maybe not getting looks, but like we could really develop into a great player, versus a guy that's played lacrosse year round and is like, man, this guy's going to hear from everybody in the first, but you're starting to think about like, which way do you want to go? One has a higher ceiling, but you're gonna have to bet on yourself as a player development model to say, hey, he's only gonna be what we think he could be if we have a great developmental plan in place for him for his first year, maybe 2 years. This guy that's plug and play may never have the ceiling, but he may be able to play right away and is gonna understand the nuances of the game, much more coachable inside of our system immediately. So if you're deciding between those two players, that's a really constructive conversation with your coaching staff to say, hey. Which one do we feel like we need more? Do we need a guy that maybe won't ever be able to do the things that he could do, but right away will understand pick play, transition offense and defense, understand how to move without the ball, and, right away be ready to go. But he's 5'10", 180 pounds, and he's probably never going to get much bigger than that. You got a 6'4", Mitty, who's got, like, kind of choppy hands, but, like, good hands, but they're not smooth. But to play inside the box – he's going to have to really hone his skills. But when he opens it up, I mean, there's nobody that runs like, and so I think those are like kind of fun conversations if you do get down to a space where you have to decide one or the other. But I think you make a great point because like it's rare that you find a young man that has all those things, right? That has the character, the competence. If he is, he's a 5-star. He's a 5. And, those are guys that are coveted. So you're really finding out where are the gaps in a player. And then you're asking yourself, where in our system – with what we have, is this a guy that we feel like, hey, with the things he brings to the table, are we comfortable filling in or helping him develop those areas that maybe are areas of weakness? And so I hope that that gives you a little bit of a scope of that. And like I said, for us, you know, Rick Spielman was someone I got really close with through Chris. He was the GM of the Minnesota Vikings for years, and he showed me a sheet that they used, their scouts used, when they would go out and watch. And I loved it. It was very, very clear, very concise. And it had letter grades for just different, like they were called alerts. You know, so if you had an alert, you know, you just would circle that letter, and that was alert to go back, say, hey, man, here's my evaluation, but I had an alert on this, you know, speed, grades, like great player, but I'm hearing the grades, we got to check, you know. So I think those are great things to have in your notes so that when you do come back to September 1st, you start that journey of really understanding the player, the family, you can ask them a little bit more about, hey, tell me a little bit more about school. You know, what do you like? Do you tell me a little bit more about, you know, hey, coach, I had one bad year. Here's why. You know, that type of thing, Terry.
Well, that's actually a perfect segue into talking about the second half of the conversation, which is the communication aspect. And so one element of the, I think that, you know, pretty much every party will say that the NCAA rule change around limiting contact between college coaches and prospective student athletes until September 1st of their junior year has yielded positive ends. But at the same time, it's not without consequence. One being a tremendous amount of anxiety around that particular day, which I think most reasonable folks would say is overblown. You know, it's the beginning of something, certainly not the end of something, but at the same time, you know, it does matter. It is indicative and it shouldn't be completely discounted. How do you and how does your staff regard the role of September 1st? What do you try to get done, on that day?
Yeah. Well, let me speak to the parent perspective first. Like, you know what I mean? I'm a little bit of ways off. I got my boys aren't there yet, 7th, 8th, 5th grade. But, you know, it's been fun as a parent, even at the 29, you know, 28, 27 age group that I've been hanging around a little bit with my son. Just to hear parents and hear that kind of hysteria start to build, Terry, you know, it's kind of wild. And I think for any parents that are listening to this podcast, my hope is that they can take a little bit of peace away from saying, like, at the end of the day, your son has to fall in love with the game. And he's not going to fall in love with the game, you know, if the conversation always comes back to how do we get you recruited or how are you taking steps towards getting recruited? You know, you don't pick up the stick and play the medicine game and have that be your first thought, right? You play the game because you love it and, you know, you fall in love with it. You know, I think that for me, I would be more fixated as a parent on like getting my son to find out what exactly he loves. And if he loves, foster that. How do I build more of that into it? You know, and like, what do you love? You love box? Do you love field? Do you love playing with your club team? Do you love hitting the wall? But I just think like the more I see young men out there, the key is, do they love it? And if they get to us and they've gone through the process and they still love it as much as they ever have, the ceiling for growth is much, much higher. If it's a young man who's just burnt because it's like, man, I've spent every month of the year chasing another tournament or another event since I've basically been in seventh grade. Yeah, I mean, you may have skills and things that other guys don't have at your age. But, like, do you have that burning desire that when you step on the field to be the best, to absolutely dominate and to – you know, come to the facility and get extra work in and to find, and, you know, so I guess, Terry, that's where I'm going with is I just think that we got to get back to a place with this later recruiting date with 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th grade parents are focused on, you know, getting and building that love, you know, love for the process, love for playing, developing their skills, falling in love with hitting the wall. And then, yeah, I mean, I think the September 1st is a big day, right? It's the day, you know, it's the day that we are able to come into the process and no longer are you just talking to your club coach, asking these questions. Now all of a sudden, 70 Division I coaches and potentially, you know, hundreds of Division III coaches are like sharing themselves with you, you know, and they're starting that. And it's as cliche as it sounds, it is the start. It's not the finish. And, you know, based on young men that have really shown at that time that they're ready for a recruiting call, they'll get one. You know, but I mean, we still have spots in our 24 class, you know, and I feel like we could land a guy. We landed a guy not that long ago that may be, you know, that he may end up being one of the better players in our class. You know, you look at Trey LeClaire, he was the last guy in our class. Jack Myers was the last guy in his class. You know, Jack Jasinski was the very last guy in his class. So So these are guys that have been, you know, all league and played professional lacrosse that were very late in the game, and for one reason or another. So that's a really good reminder, and it's a great thing to focus on for, you know, the players. It's like, hey, man, look, if you want to get recruited, more about what are you willing to sacrifice? You know, are you putting down the sticks? Are you willing to put in more time on the wall? Are you willing to make your academics more of a priority? It's not like changing your club team or, hey, I didn't go to this event, so that's not why I'm not getting recruited. You know, it's looking in the mirror and saying, hey, if I'm not getting the call and the interest is September 1st, there's going to be some more evaluations in November. There's going to be some more in January. I got a couple more years here. What am I going to do to hunker down and make some changes and get this thing right? And at the end of the day, it's not going to be any different when they get to college. They're going to get to college. They're going to be one of 10 or 11 tackmen. And if they want to be one of the top three, they're going to have to look in the mirror and make some adjustments. So I think September 1st is humbling. It's exciting. It's nerve-wracking to a degree, but it's just another step. And if you get interest, that, like, you can't get excited that you've done it either, you know, because again, like, hey man, you get a call from us in the first, that's just us showing you that, hey, we've identified you and we want to start the dialogue. But it's a conversation. And as that relationship grows, it may grow stronger, but it also may grow in a way where we feel like it's not the right fit. So again, I know some of that probably goes without saying, but I think those are important things for parents to hear listening to this podcast, that if you get the call, work harder. If you don't get the call, keep working harder.
Just to reaffirm your point about, it's kind of funny because I think that, you know, the simple fact is that a very high percentage of high school players play college lacrosse relative to other sports. And so there is reality to the idea that there's, I hate this term, but there is kind of a payoff, right? And there is a transaction that goes to the I play so that I can get, right? And ultimately, I hate that. And I think that the sport, when it promotes itself, does itself a disservice by putting that forward for all the reasons that you said, particularly when it comes to the nature of the game, right? This cosmic relationship that mystical relationship that we all should have with it, regardless of our religion or spirituality. But at the same time, I also think that there's a real detriment to having a transactional approach to playing, because what it represents is this notion that whether it's an admission spot or, you know, a partial scholarship or whatever the case may be, that once I get that, then I'm done, right? And I think the question that college coaches are often asking themselves is, am I recruiting this kid as a recruit or as a college lacrosse player? And I think that that's something that, you know, I think it's very hard to mask if you're, you know, a 17-year-old, that I care more about the opportunity than I do about being somebody who's going to be a part of a team and contribute as much as I possibly can to that team's success over the course of 2 to 6 years from now. And I think that that's the type of thing that just cannot be said frequently enough. So before, you know, kind of moving a little bit into what might be considered a little bit more granular, when you have a first phone call, aside from expressing interest, what do you want the counterparty to hear, and what do you want to hear from the person on the other end of the phone?
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, I think if you're getting a phone call on September 1st from Ohio State, you know, I think for us, we've that call indicates that the competence has been identified. You know, so I think, you know, Terry, listen, man, we saw you play this summer, and I was incredibly impressed with how you played, how you competed, and not just on one occasion, but on multiple occasions. And I think that we would quickly shift the conversation to a space where, like, Terry, tell me a little bit more about you and your family. You know, if it's at midnight, you know, it's going to be short, and it's going to be just, hey, listen, brother, we're excited. You know, you're that important that we wanted to make sure you heard from us right away. You know, what's a good time in the morning that we can get on the phone and talk and really spend 20 minutes? You know, make sure that you send me a time where you have 10 to 15 minutes available, because I'd like to carve out that kind of time to spend with you. And I'll just keep a legal pad and I'll take notes, and I want to hear about their family. Now I'm digging in on, like, I know he can play. Terry, I know you can play. Let's find out more about Terry. Terry, what do you love about lacrosse? You know, Terry, what do you love about, what do you know about Ohio State? you know, tell me a little bit more
I've
about.
I've got more than 15 minutes worth of answers to both of those questions, for what it's worth.
Yeah, and you know, I think that getting curious is something that's probably not as sexy as it should be in today's world. Like, just curious questions to a young man that, you know, allows him to probably hopefully relax. You know, a lot of times I like to do a FaceTime like you and I are doing right now versus a phone call, because I think that also just kind of disarms you. You know, you just feel like, oh man, I've seen this coach, but I've never really had a chance to talk to him. I've seen him coach a couple times, but man, he seemed a lot different on the phone. You know, hey coach, I saw you post pictures of fishing this summer on your Instagram. Like, you like to fish? Yeah. Like, you know, so the conversation is probably going to be a lot more about them, getting to know them, getting to know their family. And then I'll start to probe a little bit on just like, hey, listen, why is this process important to you? You know, tell me a little bit more about what you're hoping to get out of this process. You know, why has this day been something you've been excited for a while? You know, coach, listen, it's been my dream to play college across for a long time. You know, and so I just think some of those answers are going to be preloaded probably. But if you can get past that basic answer and start to dive a bit deeper with a young man, that's typically what those calls feel like. It's not, hey, listen, we like you, come visit. It's that type of a conversation. And then it's say, hey, listen, man, like, you're one of a handful of young men at your position that we've called. And the next step for us would be extending you an opportunity to come to campus and spend some time with us, meet our players, meet our staff, get a chance to see our campus and our facilities. And most importantly, spend time together, you know, with you and your family. So if that's something you're interested in, we'd like to circle back and set that up as soon as possible. You know, and that's really how those calls in September are going to go. You know, the calls that from that point on, you know, they're going to be similar. It's just like, it's an introductory way to say, hey, tell me a little bit more about you. And I think getting a better sense from them about what they're looking for, what they know about your university. And sometimes, like in Ohio State, for example, like, I had never left New England, you know? So if you're talking to a young man, they may have no idea, you know, like, I thought it was cornfields and just, you know, I had no idea, Terry. And I know you love that as an Ohio guy, but like, when I came out to Columbus for the first time, I was blown away at what an amazing city. And, you know, 22 years later, I'm here and it's home. But for a lot of young men, it's like sharing a little bit about like, hey, what's been growing up in your house been like? You know, have you traveled? Have you seen different places? Have you been out to the Midwest? So anyway, I think those are kind of the dialogues that are fun to have. And that's when you get beyond the helmet and you really rely on your notes. And those notes that I'm taking are just as important, because then when I hand that off to Coach Voss to call him next week, he's going to typically have those notes in front of him. And, oh, hey, I heard you're playing, you know, St. Ignatius this week in football. You know, that's in the notes for my first conversation. So it's creating, you know, some more dialogue and hopefully getting a young man. Because as much as we want them to differentiate themselves in the summertime, you know, we want to differentiate ourselves too. You know, it's like, hey, we're going to spend a lot of time together and we want to start building this relationship right from the get-go.
How do you build a class specifically around the notion of, you know, at a scholarship granting program, there's a limit of 12.6 scholarships. Average roster size, you know, I know that it has fluctuated considerably over the course of the last couple of years by virtue of the additional year of COVID eligibility. But let's just say, for round number's sake, that the average roster is between 50 and 55. I counted 14 members in the class of 2023. You talked about the notion of some players getting on the field early, some players being more developmental projects. And on an average Saturday, you know, depending on the team and their style, somewhere in the neighborhood of 21 to 24, 25 players are contributing. Obviously, you have conversations with prospects who have differing expectations for themselves and differing goals for themselves, both in terms of the role that they want to fill and how they want to get on the field. How do you try to structure a class?
Yeah. Well, one thing I'll say again, just for people that are listening, and it's never going to be how you envisioned it to be, you know. So for the parents that, like, for the guys, and this is the players as well, like, my college experience wasn't how I envisioned it. I don't think you could talk to one guy on our team and say, hey, did it go exactly how you thought it did? They would all tell you no, you know. And so I think,
and that's true for you too.
Absolutely.
The class never comes to fruition the way that you expected it was going to.
Yeah. And so I think that it's okay to have an expectation. It's okay to have a goal and a vision, but I think you have to be flexible. And you have to fall back on your core. And that's what I said, like, you know, do you love it? And are you willing to be relentless in your pursuit of excellence? And if the answer is yes to both those, then you're going to find a great fit. You're going to find a great place. You know, I played at Springfield College, and it was an incredible opportunity for me. And my brother played here at Ohio State. And it was two kids from Maine that had two very different college experiences. And both had remarkable ones, you know. And so I think that that's a story for a lot of families out there to keep in mind, you know, like it's really about, but we both loved it. We both love sports, and we both love to compete. And that's what was very consistent about the two of us. And I think as you build a class and you're looking at like, hey, how do we navigate this? It is important for parents to know those numbers you mentioned, you know, 50 guys and 12 scholarships. So it's not 12 per year. I mean, you're looking at 3 scholarships a year, a lot of times less than that. Because you're, you know, typically for us, the majority of our money is in our upperclassmen, you know, because you're giving guys a little bit extra as they grow and, you know, prove themselves as Buckeyes. So if you said, hey, 2.5 for your freshman class, for a class of, say, 12 to 14, you know, you can do the math. I mean, that's just got to be realistic there. You know, I think the other things to just keep in mind with class is like, you know, if you're a face-off, a goalie, you know, typically that's one guy a year. You know, doing your homework and being able to, I think, formulate when you do get on the phone with coaches, yeah, good questions. I like being asked questions. Like, coach, tell me a little bit more about your roster size. Tell me a little bit more about, you know, where you see me playing in your offense. You know, like when someone says, hey, how many attackmen are you bringing in? That's a tough one sometimes for me because, like, look, if everybody that thinks they're attackmen, almost every first midfield line in the country is running two attackmen that, you know, played in high school. So, you know, we won't get into necessarily, we're pretty positionless in terms of our offense. And I'll just say, hey, listen, you know, we're going to try to bring in 5 or 6 of the best offensive players that we can find in the country. You know, we feel strongly that your, you know, your evaluation, what you did this summer, we see you in a group of 5 or 6 guys. You know, and that's where we see it. Now, you may play in the midfield, you may play attack, and I'll talk to them about Jesse King, you know, being an All-American at midfield 1 year and attack the next year. Like, at the end of the day, like, that's the big dream. Like, I want to get on the field. And if you're a guy that can play a midfielder attack, let's go. You know, if you're a guy that says, hey, man, you may play defensive midfield year one. I mean, the kid Blake Island for us last year, you know, you're familiar with. He was awesome for us last year. You know, he grew up in Ohio and did a PG year at Western Reserve, and I fell in love with Blake, and he wasn't heavily recruited, but he played in every game last year for us, a freshman. And right now he's worked really hard this summer. He may be a guy that we can't keep off the field offensively, but he didn't blink an eye last year when we said, hey, you're going to start as a defensive midfielder. We got him on the field, you know? And so I think for some guys, when you say that, that's a pause moment, you know, recruits will step back and, you know, sometimes that's part of the evaluation too. Like, you almost kind of try to talk them out of it and say, hey, listen, if that doesn't sound like that's for you, this may not be the place. We're going to work really hard to get guys on the field in that 20 to 25 that you said, but sometimes it might not be the role that you exactly had for yourself or right away. And that's, listen, Terry, as you know, like that's how it's going to be when they're 22 and 23 too. Like, they may have a vision of the job they want, but the chances are that first job is going to be one where they're going to have to really grind and really prove themselves to get that next step. And this is no different. So I think it's that balance of truth. Like, hey, listen, I love you. You know, like we say truth and love, like, love what you did. Here's what I love about your game. But the truth of the matter is you got a lot of work to do. And here's where I see your growth. And here's where I see you fitting in right away. And as guys start to commit, my goal with this 25 class would be to say, hey, if we can get 4 to 6 guys that we feel like we can really build around, regardless of their position, okay, 4 to 6 that are at the very top of our board by Halloween, we feel like we've had a great start to our class. So now you got about 50% of your class done. You know, you bring some guys out in January, you know, and then you really just go back into an evaluation mode during the summer. And then you go into next summer with, you know, anywhere from 4 to 5 spots available. And that's typically how we at Ohio State will structure our recruiting. If we hit it out of the park and we don't bind ourselves to that, I mean, if there's a 7th guy we feel like we really want to take, then we will. But a lot of times the conversation to a family, and the families will hear this, like, we'll say, look, we love you. We're just not ready to make that commitment now. And if you want to make a commitment elsewhere, then so be it. But, you know, 4 or 5 months from now, like, we're going to continue to keep an eye on you. And if you're interested in Ohio State, then great. We'll look at you. And that's a hard conversation sometimes for people to hear. Like, you're not interested? No, we are interested. We're just not ready to commit one of five spots to you. That's a different level of interest. And so as parents hear me say that, I know that may come across the wrong way, but I think that honesty and that truth is really important for parents to get, especially if you're going to finance a visit out to a school, or you're really trying to say, hey, I only have 3 weekends. I want to make sure that I'm visiting 3 schools that really make sense for my process. And that goes back to that communication, you know, on the phone. I don't love the question like, hey, coach, how much money would I be, you know, would I get? But you could certainly say, hey, coach, my family, things are tight right now for us. My parents are teachers, and my parents, you know, right now have some things that are tight. And, you know, we've been talking a little bit about the finances. If we do come out for a visit and we finance a trip, could you frame like what that might look like fiscally if I was to be a Buckeye? Can we just have like an idea or a conversation about what that looks like? To me, that's a very different way of asking like, hey, what's available? Is there financial aid at your school? So again, I know I'm jumping around on you a little bit, Terry. But when you're formulating a class, if a guy comes out and it's like, he's a full ride or bust, that's a good thing for us to know before you come out. Cause we may say, hey, listen, man, this isn't it. You're better off taking a visit somewhere else, than spending your money here, if that's the only way you're going to be able to get here. And so that communication's key.
And it perfectly tees up one of the things that you're in a better position to talk about than almost any of your colleagues, which is on July 1st, 2021, the NCAA, on the heels of significant pressure from state legislators, allowed student athletes to receive money and compensation for their name, image, and likeness. And Ohio State is one of the premier football brands in the country, and as a result has been front and center of that conversation. And I'm sure that a lot of that has permeated the department at large. I don't think that NIL has had a significant effect on the lacrosse landscape, but at the same time, to the extent that it has, you have a graduated senior this past year who was probably the foremost or one of two foremost college lacrosse players, at least on the men's side, in terms of taking advantage of the opportunities that were available to him. How do you regard it? How do you regard the conversations around it? What's the reality? Because I think that in the context of this entire 45 minutes that we've already talked about, where it's like, you know, a shroud of misunderstanding and allowing for essentially boogeyman to fill those space, nowhere is that more true than NIL, where you hear about this guy getting 6 figures and this guy getting 7 figures, and it's all just not true at all. So what is the reality?
Yeah, well, I don't know if I'm going to be able to answer that one completely. So that's my disclaimer right out the bat. But, you know, it is a part of college athletics. And, you know, we're very fortunate at the Ohio State University to have a team. You know, we have assembled a group that's really focused solely on NIL and in educating our athletes, helping them find opportunities, and then executing opportunities when they do present themselves. So it is very real. You know, and it goes back to that question of, coach, tell me a little bit more about, you know, what may be available to me, you know. And again, you're going to get into, you know, I'll use Mitch. Mitch is exactly what the spirit of NIL was all about. You know, Mitchell Pelkey was someone who was a student athlete who had a burning desire to create content, you know, and he's working really hard at it. He's been doing it since I first met him, you know, back in ninth grade. And, you know, he's created a platform, and the timing for him just was perfect. But it's a skill set. It's a discipline. He would tell you, you know, he was getting up at 6 a.m. and going to bed at 9:30, 10 at night. You know, he had a very different lifestyle than his roommates. And he was carving out 2, 3, 4 hours a day with his school and his lacrosse to focus on his content. It was a job. You know, it was something that he was really interested in. So was he compensated? Absolutely. But I also think that it's important for people to hear that Mitchell Pelkey has worked really hard to create what he has now and what has come to fruition. And I think that when you have an athlete that has a skill set or has maybe a platform they've worked really hard to develop, that can utilize that to create some earnings, that's a blessing. You know, I think when you look at men's lacrosse, we have 50 guys for 12 scholarships, 12.6, you know, you're chipping away at your bill. You know, so none of these guys are on full ride. So any additional resource, whether it's financial aid or in this case, like we're talking about, potentially some NIL earnings, I think it's great. We fully embrace that. And I think if a young man wants to have that conversation, you know, that's one that he's going to have to, we'll frame a little bit about what's on our team, what guys have done, give examples. But we are absolutely not in a space where we're making offers. You know, like those are things that are done through relationships with businesses, through relationships with folks that here in town. There's some collectives that are in place. And so there's where you get into some kind of different pieces of it. But I think it's important for parents, if they're curious, or if maybe they are getting, you know, the indication at a school that there's an opportunity here, they should share that. Hey, listen, coach, like I said, we just want to be completely transparent. You know, the financial component's important. You know, it's not deciding our decision, but it's going to be a factor in our decision. And if we can get a better sense from you of like what the different elements are and what may be available to our son, that's going to really help us formulate a decision. And so I just think, Terry, it goes back to what was the topic of this portion of the podcast, which is communication. And, you know, parents have got to be comfortable asking some of those questions, you know, and more importantly, the young man does. So, you know, sometimes with families, money's kind of sticky, you know, like, you know, some families that there's a parent that just says, hey, I like to have the money be me and keep my son out of that. Sometimes the athlete wants to be really involved, especially when it comes to NIL. Like, hey, coach, tell me about some of the things. Like, you know, we got an opportunity with one of the collectives here in town where every guy on our team this fall through some Instagram things is going to be able to earn any guy on our team. You know, so like that's an exciting. Now, if you don't want to do it, you don't have to. But if you want to put time in and do some videos, you have an opportunity to make a little bit of money. So you start to share some of those experiences and some of those opportunities, and you kind of go from there.
It's, I think one of the reasons that you provided that disclaimer up front that you aren't going to be able to talk about everything is because it's so dynamic and it changes so, like, I mean, it's the definition of dynamism or dynamic, right? It's changing rapidly and continuously. And so, like, what's true today might not be true tomorrow, and it might not have been true yesterday. So appreciate that, and kind of feel like, I mean, the simple fact is that we could talk another hour about this, but I gotta be respectful of your time. We covered the bases that I wanted to cover. Is there anything else that you want to add as a parting thought for folks listening to this?
No, I'm thankful for you. And, you know, I think that we have 15 states, you know, two provinces of Canada. I think that, you know, for a young man growing up in Utah, listening to this, or Texas, or, you know, even the great state of Ohio, you know, I think for them to know that there's coaches that are hungry to find guys from all walks, all different spots of the country, that the game is really exploding. And I think that, you know, the game is really special, you know, and if you've fallen in love with lacrosse and you feel like it's a sport that you want to continue to play, don't allow your spirit or your mood to be broken by a process. You know, continue to hit the wall. I remember the grocery store and the security light that I would spend hours underneath. It was a Shaw's right in the back of my house. And for me, that was like a really spiritual way to just like decompress from my day. Like whether it was football season or basketball, I was over at that wall and I was hitting it. And I think the hours that I spent there probably were one of the differentiators for me, like growing as a young man and a player. And at no point was I ever thinking about an event or a club or what I was trying to do. It was just falling in love with my stick in this game that I love so much. And so I just think for players, you know, continue to stoke that fire, continue to chase your best. And when it comes to the process, you know, be really hands-on, you know that it's your time, know that it's yours, and know that we as coaches are as excited as you are to get to know you. And I'm really thankful for you, Terry, for you guys do over at Inside Lacrosse and all that you do for the game as well.
One more. You talked about unique experiences, and I would imagine that growing up in Maine, there weren't a lot of float planes. Is that right?
Not a lot of float.
But as a college coach, you've had an opportunity to recruit in British Columbia, and some of your best Ohio State's best players have come from there. And I understand it. I've never seen this, but I understand it that in order to get to some of these remote locations of British Columbia, specifically Victoria Island, you have to take a float plane. What's it like to land on water?
Well, listen, man, I tell you what, it's something that everybody should try. You know, if you got an adventurous spirit, but you land right in the bay there. It's a gorgeous area. You know, Victoria is one of my favorite spots that I've ever been to. You know, it's just, Vancouver Island as a whole is a beautiful place, but, you know, we've had some, we call them BC Buckeyes. You know, we've had some of our best Buckeyes, certainly, in a variety of positions come from British Columbia. And, you know, alumni, and I think that's something that, you know, parents and recruits should hear. Like, when I get a guy from BC, I'm going to call one of the alums in that suburb, you know, whether it's Coquitlam, New West, you know, Delta, Victoria. We got alumni in almost every one of those areas. And so I think your interactions with people, you know, your interactions with folks, it all matters. Cause like when we're recruiting and we're trying to decide on one or two guys and we're making trips like you're describing, you know, we're going to make phone calls and we're going to want to try to do our homework. And, you know, just as you're doing homework on us, and I think those are as important in our process, Terry, as anything. You know, I think about some of the conversations that I had with Logan about Trey, you know, and then I think about, like, you know, Gary Binning was the guy that got us Logan Schuss, you know, and it was a phone call saying, hey, man, you got to see this kid from Delta. You know, dad, he's worked down the river. He's a legendary guy. You know, mom's extorting. She's an amazing woman. She's, you know, you got to meet this family. He got me really excited about who he was as a person. I came out and saw him. And so I think back to those moments and I think about recruits that are going to be future recruits. Like, a lot of times those phone calls from somebody are the phone calls that really get the door cracked. And I know for me coming out of Maine, that's what I needed, you know, and I think that we got a freshman that's here right now. You may be familiar with him, Terry. His name's Garrett Haas. He spent the last 2 years in South Africa on a mission. And I saw him as a young man in Texas doing a camp with Coach Tambroni and Coach Patrick Jamal. And I loved him. He was from the kind of a non-traditional area of Texas. He'd come to our camp. The only time I'd seen him play, I invited him to our prospect camp. He's never played on a club team. He's never played in any events. He moved to Utah, played 1 year in Utah, and then went to South Africa for 2 years. And I think he's as talented as anybody in our recruiting class. And so I think that hearing some of those stories should hopefully get people excited about it doesn't always have to be like the way. You know, you don't have to necessarily follow the cookie cutter way to what you think is what has to get you there. Your son's got to fall in love with the game, and he's got to have an elite skill set, and he's got to differentiate. And I think you can do that in a lot of different ways.
Nick Myers, really appreciate your time on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. Once again, safe travels to Italy. Enjoy yourself, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
All right, brother. Take care. Thank you.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.